Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to the program. Thanks again for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem, and this is Connecting Faith. One of the goals on the program is to find ways we can apply biblical principles to daily life situations. And today we're going to talk a little bit about flying. Ryan, are you you a fan of flying?
I'm a little scared of flying, to be honest with you. But
well, when you consider the alternative is falling, I think, as we're going to discover, that flying will be the preference here. So we're And by the way, we've got our guest today has given us some copies of his book. It's probably the publicist. I don't know if he personally gave them to us. But anyway, we do have some copies of his book to give away. So I want to just open up the phone lines right at the outset and give you an opportunity to call in. And you're welcome to join the discussion. Love to hear your story. Or if you'd like to just sign up for the book because you know someone in your circle of friends or family that could use it. I'm not looking at you when I'm talking to them.
Well, actually,
I am kind of.
I'm pretty sure you were.
Yes, we're talking with Caleb Brakey, who's a former journalist and author of "Called to Stay." He's a frequent conference speaker with sincere passion to lead, challenge, and inspire others in discussions about relationships, the church, and radically following Jesus. And he has written a new book called "Dating Like Airplanes: Why Just Fall in Love When You Can Fly." All right, you still afraid to fly?
I'm very excited to hear what's happening next. I'll tell you that. Well,
Ryan is taking close notes, and let's say right at the outset, if you would like to just call in and offer some advice to Ryan or some questions to Caleb, you're welcome to do so. The number is 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH, or you can connect with us online, myfaithradio.com. And just go to the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there. So maybe you are in the mode where you've been in the dating scene. Maybe it's blind dates or online dating or, you know, just trying to find your way and wondering, you know, as a follower of Christ, what should this look like? Well, Caleb has some great advice for us, and we welcome him to the program. Caleb, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Thank you so much for having me. I am very excited to talking about just what Dating Like Airplanes is all about.
Well, it's let's start with the subtitle, Dating Like Airplanes, Why Just Fall in Love When You Can Fly. Maybe we need to define the term falling in love and then sort of contrast that with flying in love, if you will.
Yeah, you know, we use that term falling in love all the time. And when you think of falling in love, you think of you're out of control, you're falling, you can't, you know, you're basically going to break your bones. And so I started thinking, you know, there's no book of relationships in the Bible, even though we really wish there were. And I just started thinking, you know, what if this is falling in love, what would flying look like? What would it be like to have control? What would it be like to, you know, to choose where you're going to land instead of just crash and break your bones? And I just knew that, you know, we know that God's word has the answer to every part of life. And so I was just determined, what does Scripture say about doing a relationship in a way that would fly and not fall? And so I dug into Scripture, and sure enough, it did have a lot more than I thought, just practical ways, you know, not just heady things. You know, a lot of times we get stuck in things that sound good but just aren't very practical. And so I just dove into Scripture and found some very practical things, and out came Dating Like Airplanes. And that's the difference. The Bible really can help you fly and not fall.
And we should mention, too, that at the end of most of the chapters, you have, I guess, maybe a group of fellow travelers or friends that have offered some sort of real-life experiences or insights or perspective.
Definitely. I have lots of, basically, I want to say there's at least a dozen of my friends, and they're all newlyweds. or very, very close to it, you know, maybe been married for a year or two. And I got to interview them all about their dating relationships because they were so fresh in it. And the advice that they headed to the book was fantastic. It was, you know, it really confirmed a lot of the research I'd done, a lot of the things I talked about for my own relationship, and it was very helpful just being able to go on the kind of the journey with them and the writing and just, you know, seeing what how God works through their relationship.
Well, speaking of newlyweds, I guess you've been married, what is it, 3-4 years or so, or maybe it's more than that now?
You know, actually, we just celebrated our 6-year anniversary last month.
Okay.
Very excited.
Well, let's go back and tell a little bit about your story of sort of falling in love, because, you know, some can relate to it. Others would go, well, that doesn't seem like that's a normal circumstance. But give us a bit about your background with you and Brittany.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm probably going to scare every parent who comes on this radio station, because I met my wife when she was 11 and I was 14. And that's basically when I said, that's the girl, I'm going to marry her. And so I started just, you know, same old thing, you know, flirting around and, you know, any chance I'd have, we'd be hanging around. And, you know, for the first year, we talked and flirted and we liked each other more. And then the next year, everyone noticed. And then the third year, everyone said, okay, stop. You're too young to be liking each other this much. And then I like to say the hammer fell. And it came to the, her dad just said, hey, Caleb, there needs to be a separation between you guys for a while. You're too young. You like each other too much. And when you like each other this much, you're headed in one direction. And that is the privileges of marriage without being married. So we had to have a break. And so we had a break, and it ended up being the best thing for both of us, because we really idolized each other, and we hadn't given our all to Christ, not even close at that point. And it was really a separation that Christ really drew both of ourselves to himself, and it changed everything and really set us up for an amazing relationship.
So when, how old were you when you did get married?
I was 21 and she was 18.
Okay. That's, yeah, there's a few folks just turning off the radio right now. No, just what? Oh, that's, well, your future father-in-law, he was a wise man, and maybe talk a little bit about that experience for you and the wisdom of his decision, because I'm sure that was probably one of the most difficult things for you, wasn't it, at that time?
Oh,
and of course, for any teenager, yeah. Would be, yeah.
Oh, as a young man, I was absolutely brokenhearted. I was, it was the hardest thing I've ever been through in my life. And to this day, my father-in-law will say, "Ah, Caleb, I'm sorry. I don't know if I did things right and this and that." And I go, "You know what? It doesn't matter if we did things right or whatever. It worked out and it was right for me. You know, hindsight's 20/20, and I look at it and it was perfect. And you know, my father-in-law and I now have an incredible relationship through that all. Even though he thinks he didn't handle everything right and whatnot, and it's kind of like, I mean, this is dating. You know, it's not only hard for those in the dating, but for parents too. But it all comes down to individual situations, and ours worked out just fine the way that God orchestrated it. And again, it came back to really God drawing us to Himself and teaching us what it would really mean like to truly love someone while we were apart.
Which is really kind of one of the key elements about how do we learn to really fall in love with Jesus first, and then allow Him to do His work in the bringing relationship to us, or helping grow that. By the way, our phone number, we've got some copies of Caleb Brakey's book, Dating Like Airplanes, Why Just Fall in Love When You Can Fly. If you've got a 14-year-old in your house that is convinced that he's going to marry some, well, I don't know, if it, I suppose it could be 15, 16, 70, whatever, but this may be a great resource. Or if you're in that, you know, it doesn't really matter. I think, Caleb, and we'll talk in a moment a little bit about your sort of your age demographic, you know, have maybe some different views about dating and relationships. But let me just mention the phone number. It's 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. 833-2484. And we do have some copies of the book to give away. And we're going to talk with Caleb here for the next 15, 20 minutes or so. If you'd like to just jump in with a question or maybe a story, we'd welcome that to the conversation. So, Caleb, your generation of millennials have kind of redefined romance with, you know, hookups and online dating and postponing marriage, all these things. We got, you know, Valentine's Day coming up at the end of the week. Talk a little bit about, you know, maybe what's the countercultural message in the midst of the world that you're living in.
Definitely. I mean, young people, they have it so hard today. I'm going to say it straight up, with texting, with online world, with the peer pressure. I don't know. It just seems to be everything's doubling, it seems like, and it's a hard, hard thing. But at the same time, this generation really embraces counterculture, and you can't get more countercultural than Jesus. If you want to stand out, if you want to really attract the person God has for you, if you will, the best way someone can do that is to fly. And really, what flying comes down to is I boil it down to just one sentence, and that's learn how to give what your other needs most instead of taking what you want now. And that's the countercultural part. This young people today are just taught to, hey, make yourself, you know, hey, you got to look sexy, you have to look attractive, you have to have a standout personality. And it's about you. It's, hey, how far can you go? How close to the line can I get? And really, when you flip that around and say, how can I give this person what they need most? That applies to every part of a relationship, but it starts at the very core, and that is, how can I give them Jesus? How can I be Jesus to them? How can I push them to Jesus? You start asking those questions, and you start acting like that. So, and I'm not just talking about being a prude or, hey, don't touch her. I mean, those are all important things, but to be Jesus to someone, that's what's going to – you want someone to be attracted to the Jesus in you. And the way you're pointing someone to him. And once you do that, others respond to it, and others really want to respond to it. But again, it's countercultural, and young people like to follow the leader. But it does take leaders out there who are willing to be like Jesus. Once that starts happening, though, you will find that your prospects will change and things will go a lot better for you.
We'll take a short break, but Caleb, just review that sentence again, sort of summing up what it means to learn how to fly.
Yeah, to learn how to fly is about giving your other what is needed most instead of taking what you want now. And what do they need most? It starts at the very core. They need Jesus Christ. They need you to push them to Jesus, and they need you to be Jesus to them. And then flying builds off of that. In every aspect of a relationship, you can learn to give what your significant other needs most, overtaking what you want now.
Caleb Brakey is my guest, former journalist, author of the best-selling book Call to Stay, a frequent conference speaker, a passion to lead, challenge, and inspire others in discussions about relationships, the church, radically following Jesus. The book we're referencing is his latest. It's just out, called Dating Like Airplanes: Why Just Fall in Love When You Can Fly. It's published by Harvest House. Got some copies to give away, and you can join the conversation or sign up for the drawing for the books at 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. More with Caleb Brakey as we talk dating like airplanes just ahead.
How would you describe Faith Radio?
It's inspiring.
It really challenges me.
It gives me that nudge I need in the right direction.
We'd be honored to hear why you'd listen and why you'd recommend Faith Radio to friends and loved ones. It's simple to share your story. Just call our Faith Line and leave a message with your story. The number is 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-93-FAITH. Then press 2 for the Faith Line. And thank you for sharing your story on the Faith Radio Faith Line.
Does your support to Faith Radio make a difference? We recently heard from one of our listeners. I just want to say thank you for all you have done in the lives of both my husband and me. We have listened to the station throughout our 3 years of marriage, and it has provided a great sense of support as together we are battling a challenge in our life. Thank you, good friend, for making this story possible through your generous support of Faith Radio. You can give simply and safely online at myfaithradio.com.
But Dating Like Airplanes, subtitle of the book is called Why Just Fall in Love When You Can Fly. It's from new from Harvest House. Caleb's former journalist, best-selling author. We had him on a while back about his wonderful book called Call to Stay, where he challenged millennials and really all of us to be committed to the local church. And he is that's sort of his passion about talking, whether it's relationships or the church or whatever, about radically following Jesus. What does that look like? And we're addressing it in the terms of dating relationships today. And Caleb, I heard a conversation not too long ago and talking about marriage, and they made the statement that character trumps compatibility every time. I know that you know, you talk in your book a little bit about compatibility, but talk a bit about the importance of character and compatibility.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think when I think of character, I think of someone again who reflects Christ, or someone who, you know those people you're around who, when you leave them, you're like, man, I feel like I just spent a half hour with Jesus. Basically, this person reflects Jesus, and that's what I think of when I think of character, and that is, I mean, by far, you can go with everything. I mean, seek first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be added unto you. It all starts with that Christ-like character. And that said, I mean, if you're with someone who has character, the relationship is going to work. You can work it out if both you are about your character in Christ. And then when you talk about compatibility, and this is a word that young people, and everyone loves to use, and compatibility is fine. Nothing wrong with compatibility, but it's more like a cherry on top. It's like if you have two people who have Christ-like character, it's going to work. If you add in the compatibility of, hey, we have the same life vision. You know, it's not like one of us wants to go to Africa, the other one wants to stay here, or we have nothing, no interest in common. You know, those are things that are really sweet. I mean, my wife, she writes, and I write as well, and I honestly don't think I can do a lot of the writing I do today if she wasn't a writer, just because of the different things she understands and can sympathize or empathize with. We're best friends in that way. So compatibility is great, but the relationship would work if we just had Christ, if we just had that character, and we're looking to serve instead of be served.
Which always comes to the, I guess, the rub, doesn't it? Because all of us are self-centered by nature, and so to, you know, to really be seeking the best of others, I mean, that always, there's going to be shortfalls in that all the time, it seems like.
Oh yeah, I mean that's the fall. Selfishness, pride, anything like that. That's what we're going to be dealing with the rest of our life. And so to fly to give what someone else needs most is going to be a constant battle. But that's what this book. It's a charge to really just three overarching things. And it's one, it's selflessness. Two, it's a vulnerability, and we'll probably get into that a little bit more as we talk about more of the practical things. And then three, it's this idea of, you know, God has a transcendent plan when it comes to relationships. Relationships aren't flippant. They aren't, it's not a, you know, you don't go into lightly. Like, God really does have an amazing plan for relationships. I'm not talking about just kind of the, he has a wonderful plan for your life. I'm talking about we are a reflection of, like, Christ and his bride when you head toward marriage, and it's an awesome thing to take part in. And the cool thing is God does have it mapped out the way he wants it, and he doesn't do it for our our punishment or to make it hard. He does it because it truly is the absolute best way. And you can share an amazing love with someone if you start putting Christ truly at the center and doing it the way he does, you know, give instead of take. And again, for those listeners who are frustrated right now, hopefully we can get at some more practical things, because I know how hard it is when people say put Christ at the center, and it's like, what does that mean?
Yeah, well, let's just unpack that a little bit more. We got, you know, 5 minutes or so, but just review a few, you know, talk about vulnerability, but what are some practical steps? What does it really look like in practice?
So let's hit a couple things. One of the biggest issues that you hear is purity. And I like how an author, Dana Gresh, puts this. He says, purity isn't about not having sex. It's about waiting to have it right. And so, again, start with the very basis. How can I give someone what they need most instead of taking what I want now? When it comes to purity, if you're in a relationship, you're always going to want more. You're always going to want more physical contact, more closeness, whether it be, okay, first you hold hands, now you want to kiss, now you want to do this. Anyway, so how can you give someone what they need most? Well, what they need sexual purity. They need emotional purity. And I'm not talking about like, hey, don't go on a coffee date because you might give your heart away. I mean, these are things you got to do when you're dating and things like that. But how can you give someone what they need most? Well, they do need sexual purity. How can you go about it? How can you go about your relationship and setting up those moats, if you will, those uncrossable lines where, hey, I'm going to point you to Jesus. One of the ways I'm going to do that is I'm going to walk in obedience to him. I'm going to help you stay pure. And again, this is going to think things that are hard, but the other person is going to see Christ in you. They're going to see that you want the best for them. You want what God wants for them. So that's purity. And then how about differences? This is a big area of relationships that often goes overlooked, and that is we're all created different. We do the dishes differently. We have different characteristics, and sometimes we interpret different as wrong. And so how can you and help someone become who they are, their differences, the way God's made them to be? You know, are they a hand, a foot, a finger, a toe? You know, what part of the body are they? How can you encourage them to be more like that instead of you kind of changing them into the way you live and operate? This is something that Brittany and I worked through, because I was more of the analytical side and she was a free spirit. And I thought free spirit, you know, I interpreted it more as wrong than this beautiful difference of the way what my wife is. And now it's I love it so much about her, and she brings so much of a different look to the world, and I love that, and I encourage her in that. And that can start in the dating relationship. And then finally, and a lot of this, you know, comes down to vulnerability, because when it comes to purity and differences, you have to be open. You have to talk about it. You have to throw it on the table, not be worried about the other things. And that goes into the last thing, which is, you know, how do you know and be known? So what does your other person need most in a relationship? Well, they need to know the real you. You know, if you're starting anywhere else, trying to project someone you want to be like, I'm a cool person, I'm this, I'm easy, you know, whatever. They need the real you. So how can you intentionally reveal, you know, your interests, your goals, your habits, your values, and kind of your life vision? What do you kind of see down the road for you? And in revealing this, and also as the relationship continues going, how can you reveal to them your mistakes you've made in the past, the things that have you've gone through, you're not proud of them, but they've made you into who you are today. It's covered by God's grace, but again, you're revealing to them exactly who you are. And on the flip side of that, you're also intentionally moving discussions to find out who they are, because you want to know exactly where both you are, and the true you, so that you can grow together from that true place and not this projection you want to be. So those are some practical ways you can look to give what someone needs most instead of taking what you want now.
Good summary from Caleb Brakey. The book is called Dating Like Airplanes, Why Just Fall in Love When You Can Fly. And it's setting up maybe more an intentional, determined, a new way of looking at life, and to really be focused on Jesus first in what that looks like in the areas of purity and differences, and to know and be known. Caleb, we appreciate your writing on this, and wish you many years of joy ahead with your wife Brittany, and as well as encouraging others, you know, young marrieds and those dating alike. I'm sure this book is going to be a great encouragement to many people.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate My Faith Radio and everything you're doing, and hope to come back on again someday.
Look forward to connecting again with Caleb Brakey. This is his latest book called Dating Like Airplanes, Why Just Fall in Love When You Can Fly. Again, we've got some copies that we'll give away, do a little drawing at the end of the show. So if you'd like to sign up for that, give us a call right now. Well, you can go online if you'd like to do it, myfaithradio.com. And click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there. Or you give us a call at 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. It's National Marriage Week, Valentine's Day, coming up here on Friday. We're going to talk more about marriage and some more insights on dating just ahead. Stay tuned to Connecting Faith.
Back now to the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired encore presentation.
You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. We're talking today about love and relationships. Of course, love is in the air. Valentine's Day coming up Friday. And so we've been talking about dating and falling in love or flying into love. We want to get some wise advice from seasoned relationship veterans right now and theology professors as we hear about a great book called Are You Waiting for the One? Cultivating Realistic Positive Expectations for Christian Marriage. And this has come out of a series of teaching that Margaret Kim Peterson and her husband Dwight Peterson have done as they have carried on their role as professors of theology at Eastern University at St. David's, Pennsylvania. They've written several books and have done a number of seminars on the topic of relationships. And Christians always have so many questions about, how do I know if there is the one? So we'll address that and more with Margaret Kim Peterson and Dwight Peterson. The book is from InterVarsity Press, and it's our topic of discussion here for the next half hour. Talk a little bit about, I think, particularly as you set out in the book, the idea of, well, I guess the subtitle is about a realistic, positive expectation for Christian marriage suggests that maybe we don't have a realistic or necessarily positive expectation for Christian marriage today.
Well, I think that's true. I think that there are a lot of negative expectations for marriage out there. I don't think people mean it that way, but when we hear our students say that people are always telling them how much work marriage is, how hard it is, how hard you have to work at it, we wonder, you know, what do people think that marriage involves, really? And then as far as realistic expectations are concerned, I think sort of the other, you know, what you get at the other end of the pendulum swinging is people saying, well, it will be bliss, sheer bliss, and everything will be perfect, or everything ought to be perfect. So if you're in a marriage and everything isn't perfect, you think, oh, my gosh, there's something terribly wrong with me. And so one of the things that we've really, really tried to do in our class and with our students is, you know, be realistic about what it takes to build a relationship that's successful and fun, and, you know, what's realistic to hope for? You know, how do you, you know, what kinds of challenges ought you to expect? What kinds of tools should you expect you'll need to have in order to succeed?
We also talk about positive expectations. You know, lots of people, and certainly lots of our students, have grown up in homes that were less than ideal. And so part of what Margaret and I do when we teach our class and what we were thinking about when we were writing the book is to model, to the extent that we can, a good marriage in front of our students. And then by the end of the class, we end up saying, look, you can do this. It's possible to live well in the married state. You can, in fact, do it. So that's a big part of what we had in mind in the book, too, to imagine with our readers things that they can do and ways that they can be that can help them have a good marriage.
The book is called Are You Waiting for the One? Subtitled Cultivating Realistic Positive Expectations for Christian Marriage from Margaret Kim Peterson, Dwight N. Peterson, my guest today. You do talk a little bit about, right at the outset, about how Christians are sort of succumbing to, I guess, the romanticized ideals of marriage, right? And that there's a lot of books and seminars and teaching out there that may not be helping us get a good sort of biblical framework for what marriage is all about.
That chapter originated in a public lecture that Margaret and I gave, gee whiz, about 10 years ago now, that we entitled, God Doesn't Want to Write Your Love Story. And the idea behind it was not that God is not interested in your love life, but that there are ways of imagining what having God involved in your love life can look like that are less than positive, that often involve, for instance, turning your rationality off, not taking responsibility for your own decisions.
I caught sort of three words that I thought like you'd expand on a little bit, because sort of in that context, you talk about what is sort of a typical maybe presentation. There's isolation and imagination, and then there's revelation. And so talk about what you were setting up there.
Well, again, I think maybe one thing to say right now is the people who do this, they mean so well. You know, they really do want to help people toward positive and healthy relationships, but this is not a good way to do it. And the message in a lot of these Christian romance books is that marriage is completely different from any other relationship. So if you really want to be married, you need to not have close emotional relationships with anybody else. And then you sort of imagine what your future mate is going to look like and what your life with that future mate is going to look like. And you cultivate this fantasy and you write it all down and you write letters to this imaginary soulmate that one of these days you're going to meet. And then while you're moving through the world, all of a sudden you meet somebody and you think, okay, this is the one. This is the person. I just know. I'm just sure that this is the person God has for me. And it's a very limited way to approach life and relationships. You know, the relationship, intimate relationship, fun relationship, meaningful relationship is way bigger than just romance or just that special someone. And the way to move, we think, toward having, you know, again, a range of rewarding relationships and, you know, maybe that special relationship with someone you might marry is not to imagine what it might be in the future, but to build positive, content-filled relationships now. And then as far as choosing a partner, we think it's really a good idea to think about it, not just to feel about it, but really a good idea to think about it and to make a considered decision for or against a particular relationship leading to marriage.
Guys, let's talk about what makes a marriage Christian.
Well, one of the things that we try to stress with our students is that there's no kind of magical formula or checkoff sheet that if you do these three things, then you have a Christian marriage. That we see Christian marriage as being part of Christian life, and that the kinds of things that characterize a Christian life are, we hope, things that we'll bring into our marriages. One of the things that we've sometimes done is assign a book to our students on the Christian life, sort of understood in terms of the fruit of the Spirit. And we've occasionally had students write us essays where they say, you know, I saw we were going to read this book on the fruit of the Spirit, and I thought, well, what does that have to do with marriage? And then I read the book, and I thought, boy, I want all of these things in my marriage. So that's one of the ways we think about it. You know, another thing we talk about in the book is how the Christian liturgies for marriage are one of the things that kind of communicate expectations over generations for what marriage is going to be. Things like marriage as a context for the bearing and rearing of children, marriage as a place for sex to be good and life-enhancing and you know, as God intends it to be, marriage as a place for spouses to support one another and to bear with one another faithfully in everything that life brings, you know, until death do us part. You know, those are all things that make a marriage Christian. It is the case that one of the things that Christian marriage liturgies do is they gather together lots of people in support of this couple, and then the liturgy rehearses, well, what is marriage? What is marriage for? It's a chance for everybody who's been married to think, well, now what did I promise? And for people who aren't married to think, will I ever want to do this? Or, you know, if I do enter into the married state, what's that going to look like for me? And then it creates a context, a community for the new married couple to have some support and some guidance and some company on the way. And I do think that that's one of the things that can get lost in our culture today, that we tend to think of marriage in more individualistic terms. And, you know, people write their own vows and, you know, they want to have a wedding that reflects who they are in a really personal or idiosyncratic way. And, you know, of course, there's a place for you know, personalizing things, but we wonder if sometimes people aren't trying to reinvent the wheel and that maybe the reason, you know, we end up with some kinds of challenges in marriage is because we're not open to learning as much as we might from others and from people who've gone before.
You're talking about sort of the individualistic perspective. I know you address issues like kind of the career track or not, you know, I guess we sort of touched on about, you know, waiting because I don't want anything sort of get in the way of my plans, but you know, lots of kind of confusion today about sex and children and all those things. Let's talk a little bit about that, how maybe the world's influence have really infected us as believers as well.
Well, I think that's true. You know, one of the things we talk about in the book is how even among Christians, there is an expectation that young people not get too tied down too soon because, you know, life is full of choices and it's full of options. And the way you have a really full life is you're able to make a lot of choices and have a lot of options open to you. And so while I think there are many Christian parents who would be very happy to have their children married relatively young, you know, in their early 20s, say, as opposed to in their later 20s, a lot of those same parents do not think it would be a good idea for their kids in their early 20s, even if they're married, to be having children yet, because they think, well, that will tie you down. I mean, how will you manage to go to graduate school? How will you manage to build your career? How will you, you know, do all of those things that young people ought to be able to do, you know, travel and be kind of, you know, without constraint? And so we end up having, you know, a pregnancy in a couple who've only been married a year or two be an emergency because, oh my gosh, there were all these things that we were supposed to do before we had children. Now we won't be able to do them. And that seems to us to be, I don't know, just not really in accord with the really positive and hospitable vision that Christian tradition has had for children in marriage. You know, children are a blessing. They're one of the things marriage is for.
One of your chapters is called Why Christians Have Children. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, well, we do talk about that in the book. And, you know, our sense is that one of the big reasons Christians have children is, again, it's a special version of hospitality. It's a way of having this very intimate relationship, the marriage relationship, be not just for the husband and wife alone, but open to those whom God gives to them as their children. And, you know, this is something we think doesn't get remembered often enough or doesn't get said openly enough, that children end up being kind of a lifestyle choice. And, you know, in the world we live in where there's contraception available and, you know, good reasons to use it under a whole range of circumstances, it does kind of alter the moral calculus of childbearing and child rearing. You know, children end up being seen not as sort of the fruit of the marriage relationship or as you know, gifts that God gives as God wills to give them, but as choices that we make and choices we ought to make. And, you know, we shouldn't make irresponsible choices about when to have kids or whether to have kids.
And, you know, we do talk about child rearing in terms of hospitality. And hospitality, of course, means something like welcoming strangers. And anybody who's had a child knows that children are strangers. You know, our son, whom we adopted when he was just 10 days old, you know, when he was really small, he did what little small children do, not much. And then as he started to grow up, he became sort of his own idiosyncratic person, who's very different from Margaret and very different from me. And part of the challenge of being a parent, right, is to make room for this strange little guy who's in your family. And I think it can be sort of seen as practice for making room for other strange little people, other interesting foreign to you kinds of people who you can welcome into your lives in the name of Christ.
Well, in fact, even just that phrase probably is one of the key aspects of understanding what marriage is all about, right? Making room. I mean, it's making room for another in a relationship and for different viewpoints and conflict and all those kinds of things, right?
Well, that's the truth, isn't it? We talk about children being strange little people. Well, spouses are strange to you too, aren't they? You know, you think you know them, and then you don't. You know, there are constantly areas of your spouse's life, I guess I'm speaking from my own experience and maybe some from Margaret's, that, you know, we sort of turn a corner and realize something new about each other. And part of being married well is sort of habitually being able to make room for that.
Coming up in a moment, we'll get to some more biblical advice on a Christian marriage and talk about issues like handling conflict and violence. Margaret Kim Peterson and Dwight Peterson, my guest today. The book is called Are You Waiting for the One? And this is Connecting Faith.
Real, lasting encouragement for life's ups and downs.
On that day, I turned the radio on, sitting there with no hope left. And this topic came up on co-parenting. I thought, well, now here we go. This is like a sign. What are the odds of this, right? Awesome coaching job and the prayers and all that and the people that called in. And, I mean, I was driving down the road in tears. I think by tuning in, it puts things in perspective.
Highlighting real hope every day. Faith Radio.
If your future college student is wondering what's it like, is the Christian community as great as it sounds? It's time to find out. Your students shouldn't wait till their freshman year to experience college life. At Northwestern's Icebreaker February 16th and 17th, they'll stay in the dorms, eat in the cafe, play games, and visit classes to help decide if the Northwestern community is right for them. To sign up for Icebreaker, visit unwsp.edu/visit. University of Northwestern, St. Paul. Your life on purpose.
Welcome back to an encore presentation, The Best of Connecting Faith, on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired program.
You're listening to Connecting Faith, and today we've connected with Margaret Kim Peterson and her husband, Dwight. Both have served as professors in theology at Eastern University, St. David's, Pennsylvania. Margaret has written several books, including Sing Me to Heaven and Keeping House. And together, they've done a number of conferences and seminars called God Doesn't Want to Write Your Love Story. And out of that has come the book, Are You Waiting for the One? Cultivating Realistic, Positive Expectations for Christian Marriage, published a couple of years ago from InterVarsity Press. And we're wondering, if God doesn't want to write your love story, then what kind of advice can we give our teens and young adults as they pursue dating relationships? And maybe some biblical foundation for that.
Well, one of the things that we talk with our students about is how I think there are... I don't know, we've never met a Christian who didn't care about building deep relationships or who didn't want to have, you know, a strong, you know, supportive network of intimate relationships as an adult, whether or not that included marriage. But sometimes we express our desires in ways that turn out to be cliches that don't have a lot of content. And so, you know, I want God to write my love story is one way to talk about it, or to say, I want to keep God at the center of my relationship. That's another way to say it. And, you know, we say to our students, well, what does that mean? And they say, well, I don't know. and so then we try to say, well, now let's think. What would it mean to have a Christian relationship? And again, one of the things that we think that it means is being kind, yeah, in a really reliable kind of way, being gentle, being willing to be honest about what you're thinking and feeling, and make there be room for the other person to be honest about what they're thinking and feeling.
Being able to listen to the other one, I mean really listen. Sometimes we imagine that listening is a very passive activity. It turns out that if you listen well, it's hard work. You know, you have to attend to the person that's talking to you. You have to try to really understand what they're saying, and sometimes you have to ask follow-up questions so that you can make sure that you're actually hearing what the other person is saying. This can be this is not a natural gift that most of us are born with. It's something that needs to be cultivated, and cultivating it can really make a big difference in a marriage.
I think just doing things together, too. You know, I mean, we talk a lot about talking. I mean, I think sometimes that can be,
yeah.
I don't know, sort of, you know, I hate to put it this way, but too feminine an emphasis. You know, what do girlfriends do when they get together? Well, they talk. Well, what do guys do? Well, they do stuff. And, you know, doing stuff is important, too, for the girls as well as for the guys. You know, working at things together, having there be a project. I think, again, there are so many options for kind of entertainment and busyness in our culture that we think that we've spent time with somebody when we've done something entertaining with them or when we've been busy together. But to really work together on a project, or, you know, alternatively, to take time to really have a long, in-depth, interesting conversation about something, these are things that really build relationships.
I have something that I can just horn in on here.
Sure.
One of the things that we have come to see in our teaching of the marriage class and our writing of this book is how important sort of habits of communication are between people. How a lot of times, and especially maybe with young people, but maybe not so especially, there can be a tendency to be sharp, not really friendly, overly sarcastic with people, really critical of, especially sometimes, of people that you like the most. And what Margaret and I try to do with each other, and try to teach our students to do, and say a little bit in the book about doing, is to be careful about the words that come out of your mouth. To be kind with what you say. We have a story that is recounted in the book of a woman that took our class about 10 years ago. She was older than most students. She was probably 40-ish. And she and a girlfriend that she had in her neighborhood were walking one day and decided that for a week, each of them would try to say kind things to their husbands. like things like thank you, and I appreciate you so much. Oh, that was good of you to do that. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. That kind of lacing their conversation with kind words, and they came back a week later, and they were amazed at what a difference it made. Go ahead, Margaret. Mm.
And I think sometimes we think that for things to change for the better in a relationship, something really big and dramatic has to happen. But I think sometimes what the relationship needs is just kind of, I don't know, lubrication with the oil of kindness. Just being nice in an intentional kind of way and spending time, you know, giving the relationship time and attention, not necessarily lots and lots of it. I mean, we've all got lots of commitments that we have to keep, but having the relationship be as important as some other things and giving it attention, giving it nurturance.
You know, on the other side of that, I guess the other side of the spectrum is conflict, and you spend a whole chapter talking about that, of conflict and even violence and safety. Obviously, sadly, this is something that we need to be addressing before marriage and certainly into marriage as well.
Well, this has become a really key focus of our class, is talking about conflict and, sadly, again, about violence. And the reason that happened was before we taught the class for the first time, we were talking about the idea with two faculty-colleague couples. And as we were chatting with these four people, these two couples, it turned out that three of the four of them had grown up in violent homes. And we were just shocked because neither of us did. You know, we sort of knew that that kind of thing happened, but, you know, we hadn't really thought about it happening to people we knew. And so we thought, my gosh, we need to open the door to conversation about this, you know, when we teach our class. And we didn't really know what to say, but we brought up the subject. And my gosh, the stories we got from our students. And it's just, it's been a lesson in how hard this is for so many families and married couples to negotiate. And now, unfortunately, in a lot of dating relationships, violence is becoming more of an issue. And so we talk about that a lot in the book, and we talk about it a lot in class. And I guess one of the number one things we say is conflict and violence are not the same. You know, every relationship is going to have conflict because people aren't identical and they have different ideas and different preferences. Violence is an attempt to use control, coercion, violence itself as a way to control the other person. And you don't have to go there, and you don't need to go there, and there are ways to navigate conflict that aren't violent. And so, again, we've talked a lot with our students about, conflict resolution strategies and conflict addressing strategies that can help people build positive habits so that they don't then end up opening the doors that lead down the road to violence.
You talk about, mentioned how hard this is to do, and really, you know, kind of everything we talked about. I mean, it's something that is probably new and foreign to us, for many, at least as we think back to our pursuit of marriage and that whole process. So are there biblical principles is it simply just applying the fruit of the Spirit and these things are going to come, or?
You know, we think there's more to it than applying the fruit of the Spirit and these things are going to come.
Although applying the fruit of the Spirit can't but be helpful, right?
Yes, right.
Yeah, that always helps.
Yes.
But we think that there are sort of strategies that you can think of for addressing conflict in terms of trying to be honest with one another about what the conflict is about. You know, what are we arguing about? And, you know, what are the issues and why does this seem to matter so much? We think that thinking about families and the histories of conflict and conflict resolution in our families is really important.
There's a thing called a family map that we just stumbled upon before the first time we taught the class, and we did assign it the first time, didn't we, sweetie?
I think we did. Yeah.
And what it is it's like a genealogy, except for you highlight the relationships and other things that you think are important about your family. So, for instance, if there's somebody who is the person who knows everything in your family, who knows all the history, you would highlight that. If there's a person in the family who seems to be sort of the hub of all conflict in the family, you would highlight that. What other kinds of things would we highlight in a family map suite?
Oh, just all kinds of patterns. You know, who got married and when they got married, and things like illness and health, and I mean, just all sorts of ways to do it. But certainly, in terms of bringing this back to the topic of conflict,
yes.
you can learn a lot about how you kind of the assumptions that you make about how conflict is going to happen and how it's going to be addressed by looking at the ways that it's happened in your own family. And then that gives you the freedom to make some different decisions for yourself if you need to.
I guess I was thinking in terms of even
even broader than just conflict. That, I mean, you know, this is new territory for us. I mean, so just the whole kind of process, I think, is, you know, we don't necessarily have the realistic expectations. And so I guess we're looking for the strategies there as well, the bigger principles to hang on to.
Yeah, I think that's true. And, you know, one of the things that you know, we've talked a lot about, I don't know whether we have time to really get into this before the break, but we've talked about Ephesians 5 with our students a lot, because that talks about headship and submission in marriage. And a lot of Christians, we've found, think that what that discussion of headship and submission is all about is about conflict resolution, and, in fact, about having there not be conflict in marriages. And we think that ends up being pretty counterproductive in a lot of cases, that it's that if you take that verse as meaning that somebody just gets to make the decision, quote-unquote, and it's, you know, usually the husband who's identified as the one who makes the decision, then somehow your conflict will go away. Well, that just having somebody make a decision doesn't make a conflict go away. It just kind of drives it underground. And so we talk a lot about what it might look like to bring these conflicts up to the surface and have honest conversation about them, think about what some ways to address it might be, thinking about ways to come to consensus. We think compromise is highly overrated. You know, you get some, I get some, and then we're okay. Well, it turns into this tug of war that doesn't really resolve conflicts. It just makes everybody on the alert to make sure I don't lose this time. But, you know, what does it look like to come to consensus, to find a way to agree on something that works for both of us? It's so much better to do that. It's a lot more work, but it's so much more rewarding, and ends up making husbands and wives or relationship partners feel, you know, jointly invested in the relationship and like they're both contributing something and they're both, you know, making something that's bigger than the sum of its parts. That's really, and it's fun. It's exhilarating. It can be a very, very positive and relationship building experience to do that.
As I've, you know, read, gone through the book, it's, you do emphasize a lot about pursuing deep relationships, and it does seem like we have kind of assume that we can't pursue deep relationships except for that one, you know, and that we miss out on really God's design for us to really be a part of the body of Christ.
I think sometimes there's a tendency to think that intimacy means sexual intimacy, and then as Christians to think, well, that's only appropriate in marriage. So a truly intimate relationship is a marital relationship by definition. The more we fill up our relationship cup with connections with lots of different people in different directions, the more we have a chance then of being the kind of person who maybe could meet that special someone and maybe could build that intimate relationship that is marriage in particular.
The insights we've been sharing the last few minutes coming from Margaret Kim Peterson and her husband Dwight. They have co-authored the book, Are You Waiting for the One? Cultivating Realistic, Positive Expectations for Christian Marriage, published by InterVarsity Press. Both Margaret and Dwight have served in the theology department at Eastern University in St. David's, Pennsylvania. Joining us today on Connecting Faith, Caleb Brakey. Before that, if you'd like to hear either Caleb's interview or our interview with Margaret and Dwight, you can go to our website at myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith for the podcast archive. And thank you for listening to Connecting Faith.